We left off in Galatians chapter 4. We're ready for the 12th verse. As you back up a little bit, Paul talked about the fact that the Galatians, they had been in bondage when they had been involved with idolatry. They primarily came from a Gentile background. He said in Galatians 4:9, you've come to know God, and why go back and return to that state of spiritual bondage? Why leave the gospel of Christ? You found everything as far as the spiritual blessings in life. Don't listen to the false teachers. Don't go back to some of the religious system. Stick with the gospel. You have another appeal found in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 12. He says, I beseech you, brethren, become as I am, for I also am become as are ye. Ye did me no wrong. This is a letter where Paul kind of goes back and forth a little bit. Sometimes he chastises them. It's almost like a parent that corrects a child. There are times where the parent may get on the child, and then the parent also says, I want you to know that I still love you. And that's kind of what Paul is doing here. He's already used that word back in places like Galatians chapter 1 and verse 11, and also Galatians chapter 3 and verse 15. But here you have it joined with another word, and that additional term is beseech. I beseech, I beg you, brethren, stay on the right path. He uses the present tense there to encourage them to do that. Paul's making the point that he had left the system of Judaism. He has a lot to say about that over in the Philippian letter, Philippians chapter 3, verses 4 through 7. He became a Hebrew of the Hebrews. He was someone who sort of went through all the steps to become a great Pharisee, all those kinds of things. And he was someone who had also, as you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 21, for instance, he had put that behind him. He had learned to live as a Gentile as far as eating the various meats and doing several non-Jewish things. And he's saying, I became as you were. I have learned to live as a Gentile, and that's a perfectly fine way to live as a Christian. You don't have to follow all the Jewish precepts and rules, and now let's make sure that together we are on the same page. If they didn't do that, I mean, if you have a good friend, as long as you're doing the same things, thinking the same things, friendship is easy. But what happens when a friend goes in a much different direction? Is that a problem?
Sometimes.
It is. Had a fella, he found me, we met him when I was in the military a long time ago. And some decades had gone by, and he saw something and connected that with me and was able to find me through a third party. And we reached out and we thought, wow, the establishment of a long-lost friendship. Well, this particular brother had fallen away from the church. He kind of came back and he got wrapped up in a false doctrine that plagued some congregations. And that was where his mind was. That's where his mind is. And he became completely centered on that. He wanted to discuss that. I was willing to do that, but I said, look, that's just a no-go for me. I mean, that is not correct teaching. And unfortunately, that severed that sort of renewed friendship. I mean, it didn't last very long. It was kind of like, wow, we found each other after all these years, and then all of a sudden, I don't want to have anything to do with you if you're not going to buy into this. So that's tough if you're not on the same plane and you're doing the same kinds of things. So Paul knows that these false teachers have sort of taken the Galatians and pushed them away from him, and he's trying to overcome that and say, look, I want you to be as I am. I want to be as you are. And we can all be brethren if we will simply abide by the truth. The verse ends by saying, you did me no wrong. Now, when you say that, you did me no wrong, that's actually a light at ease. We don't use that particular word very often, but it is a form of speech. You have a negative statement used to make a positive point. And we do that at various times. If somebody says, that's not bad, that's a light at ease. And what do we mean by that? Somebody eats food and they says, that's not bad. Or somebody makes something and we say, that's not bad. We really mean,
it's not the best, but I can tolerate it.
Well, we could mean it that way. But don't we also use it in a different way? When someone says, that's not bad, that actually means that's really good. You did an excellent job. So it can have a couple of different meanings. If somebody were to say, and this is perhaps less common for us, but if someone says, I don't have a few regrets, that actually means not a few regrets means I have many, or I have more regrets. When Mary was told, this is back in Luke chapter 1 and verse 37, that nothing was going to be impossible for God. What's that mean? If nothing is impossible, then
he can do
all things. He is a light at ease. Another one, you have this one in Scripture, Acts chapter 21 and verse 39. The Bible says that Tarsus, the place where Paul was from, where he was reared, that is no insignificant city. What's that mean? It's a very important city. That's just kind of counter to how we talk. We usually sort of just, you know, say something and that's the way it is, and it's very easy to understand, but there is this form of speech, and that is exactly what we have here. At this point in time, Paul has used just about every argument he can use as far as bringing the Galatians back to where they need to be. If you back up a little bit, he talked about in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 2, he said, you've received the Spirit. Now, if you received the Spirit from God, why on earth would you want any other system? He didn't stop there. He went back and talked about Abraham and how Abraham was justified by faith in Galatians chapter 3, verses 6 through 9. Everybody was interested in Abraham, even the false teachers, from what we can tell. And if Abraham was justified in this way, good enough for him, it should have been good enough for everybody else. And then he talks about Christ's death, Galatians chapter 3, verses 10 through 14. Then he backed up a little bit more and talked about Moses. He said, we can talk about Moses, but you have Moses coming 400 years after the promises to Abraham. So Moses' law really can't be tied in with justification. Justification has to be separate from law keeping. Then he talked about in Galatians chapter 3, verse 19 to chapter 4 and verse 7, the fact that the law actually imprisoned people. There are times where you feel like you are talking to someone and it is a brick wall. Someone says, I talked to them until the old expression goes blue in the face, and I'm just not getting anywhere. That's kind of what you have Paul doing with the Galatians. This is a short letter, but he keeps coming back and hammering the point home again and again. You can't be justified by law. You can't be saved by law keeping. That includes the Ten Commandments. That includes any system of law, because that requires perfection. So he now makes this personal appeal to say to his friends, hey, let's get you back on board and stick with what's right. And sometimes a personal appeal is all that is needed. You simply need to appeal to friendship to encourage someone to go back and start doing what's right. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Galatians 4, 13 through 15? Sherman?
What did the end of verse 12 say in what you read?
Ye did me no wrong.
Okay. But mine says you have not injured.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make it a little less of a light of tease to make it a little clearer. But yes, that was the point, that you've not hurt me. So he was going to be hurt if these guys went off with the false teachers. That was definitely going to be injurious to him. But Paul, and he's going to talk about this a little bit more as we get further into the text, when he was there, they really rolled out the red carpet for him. Anybody else? Okay, Galatians 4, 13 through 15. But ye know that because of an infirmity of the flesh, I preached the gospel unto you the first time. And that which was a temptation to you in my flesh ye despised not, nor rejected. But ye received me as an angel of God, even as Christ Jesus. Where then is that gratulation of yourselves? For I bear you witness that if possible ye would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me. This continues that discussion that Sherman was highlighting just a moment ago from verse 12. Paul said, you did not injure me. You did not do anything hurtful to me. You did not damage me in some way. Paul says, as he continues to this particular point, he says, you know, and that's the perfect tense. You knew this in the past. You still know this information as far as my first visit with you, that when I came to see you, I was sick. Anybody ever have a visit from someone, or you went to visit somebody and you were sick? Those can be some rotten times. You remember that. I got sick and vomited on the carpet, or they got sick and had to be taken to the hospital. A lot of times we remember those instances, and that's what Paul's calling their mind back to. There was something that was going on in his life at this particular time that caused him to be ill. So we don't know exactly what he means by the first time. On his first missionary journey, he would have seen the Galatians two times. So it could be that he's referring back perhaps to that particular period. We do know that as you look at the word which is translated sick here, he had an infirmity of the flesh. It was a pretty serious matter. And he says, you did not despise, or you did not reject me. Are there some people today who might be perfectly capable, but as people look at them, they reject them for some reason? If you were going to hear, for example, a speaker, or you were going to listen to someone perform a show, might there be some people who might have something off-putting when it comes to their appearance? What about the guy who's missing an arm or a leg? He might be perfectly capable. She might be perfectly adept at doing whatever needs to be done as far as a performance. But does that kind of color the judgment of people, the thinking of people? He's missing an arm, he's missing a leg?
Until they start speaking.
Yeah, and the person might not even get a chance, might not even get an opportunity, because they're dismissed because they're missing a body part. What about the person who has some other issues? What about the person who is up there? the person who's coughing. Does that impact the individual's presentation? It does. Now, maybe a little irritating, but I mean, especially if you're thinking, man, I'm going to be diseased by the time I leave here. I'm going to be sick, you know, coughing all those germs out. Huh?
I know of a preacher that constantly put his glasses on. Then he'd take his glasses off. Then he'd put his glasses on. Or, you know, some of them pace back and forth on the carpeting.
Yeah, there can be some things which distract from a presentation. What would it be like if you have a speaker who was completely disfigured in his face? I mean, maybe one of the brightest guys you've ever listened to and very, very effective as far as the speech, but his face looks hideous because he was burned in a fire. You think that would affect some people? It would. So here is Paul. He comes. And whatever the sickness is, and we'll throw out some possibilities, we don't know exactly what it was, but he makes the point that his bodily presence was not all that attractive. Now, we know if you were to turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, that's kind of a different context, but he talks about the fact that there were critics who said that his bodily presence was weak. That is, he was not a very impressive speaker. So he's already sort of got that going against him, at least in the minds of some false teachers. But now we have something else. When you look at the verses that we read, you have the word which is translated despised. Some translations would use the word disdain. That means to make of no account. It means to despise utterly. If you were to look at that passage elsewhere in Scripture, you would find that it's used in Luke chapter 23 and verse 11 to describe Jesus. The soldiers despised the Lord. The soldiers rejected the Lord. The soldiers spurned the Lord. But Paul says, even though you could have done that to me, you didn't do that. That word's also used as far as Paul's discussion with the strong and the weak Christians in Romans chapter 14 and verse 3. And then another case where it's found would be 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 11. Paul told Timothy, to go to Corinth, and the Corinthians were told not to despise Timothy. That likely was because of his youth. So we do have people who are despised sometimes, they're looked down upon, they are disregarded, they're not listened to. But Paul says, look, you could have done that, but you didn't do that. In addition to that word, we have a second term, and that additional word is going to be ekpetuo. Now, when you hear patuo, what comes to mind?
Spitting.
All right, spitting comes to mind. And if you were to look at that word literally, it does describe spitting. But here, it seems like the sense would be something like loathe or despise or reject. One source in defining the word said it was a vulgar, koine word and noted how ancient people spit in ancient times. This might seem really curious for us. But when you start looking at Scripture, you can find this in John chapter 9. You can find this back in the book of Job. People believed, even in the book of Acts. Remember the story about Paul? He's got the snake. And what did the barbarians on the island think after he'd been bitten? You must be a...
Murderer.
Yeah, you must be a murderer. You must be a bad guy. You're a criminal. If you were not a criminal, the snake wouldn't have bitten you. So people today sometimes have that same kind of view, maybe not to the extent of Bible writers, but if a Christian, for example, has something go really wrong in his or her life, are there some brethren who would reason God must be out to get me for something? God's punishing me for something? You think anybody reasons in that way?
Sure.
Sure. So that is a common thing to believe. People, I think, generally have the idea that if, you know, they're kind of in harmony with the universe, if they don't believe in God, or if they're living a godly life, things will go reasonably well. And when things get disrupted, when there are significant problems, then the universe, or for the Christian, God is somehow unhappy with them. Do those two things necessarily go together? No. I mean, you look at Job. He was a righteous guy, and look at his life. It was just a disaster for a period of time. So sometimes things don't line up quite as we would like. But there were people in ancient times who believed that either demons or bad actions on the part of somebody could cause illness and troubles. And if Paul's working in areas like Galatia, and you have these people who are from a heathen background, and you show up, and you have this medical issue which makes you look awful, it makes you look undesirable, it puts you into a position where a lot of people would reject you, they very well might have spit. They spit in hopes of warding off demons. They hope to maybe ward off bad luck by spitting. So maybe Paul had some of that in mind when he used this particular word. Maybe not. But we do know how ancient people thought, and it's interesting that Paul used this particular term. Anything that you want to add or ask before we say a little bit more? Gary, to you.
Well,
In this time period, like, those with leprosy were pretty much isolated, yeah. right? And so my guess is that in that culture, if you had any deformities or chronic illnesses or whatever, that you kind of wouldn't have been viewed as a full citizen of the society type of thing, right? Did they have fewer rights or...
Yeah, you, for example, you think about beggars in the New Testament. Jesus certainly interacted with some, not exactly in the leper colony, but also they were not going to be the people who are going to be running for mayor. And we do have a similar thing today. We with the homeless and also some people who have significant health issues. They're often sidelined by people in society. Supposedly it's illegal to discriminate against people who have some kind of handicap, but I mean, it has happened. People are thinking that's a liability as far as extra medical coverage, or they're not going to be able to work as hard, as fast, or as whatever as some other employees, so we're not going to hire that person. So thinking that you're going to be a fully normal member of society has always been a challenge, even in a culture like ours.
So it might be difficult for people to listen to that person.
Yeah.
If in their mind.
Especially, yeah. You're thinking the guy is demon-possessed, perhaps, because of whatever illness is going on. We'll talk more about that in just a second. Or here's the guy who has messed with the universe. I mean, this isn't the guy we want to hear spiritual information from. So he's actually going to use the word temptation, if we didn't read that already. And it was for these people to reject the messenger. And Paul commends them because they did not do that. And today that's commendable as well. Tim?
A lot of times, somebody who, I don't know if there'd be a professional speaker, but they may be in the throes of speaking, and if they have a speech impediment, they're looked at as having something wrong with their brain.
Yeah.
When there's really nothing wrong with their brain, but because that speech impediment, which may have been just a habit they picked up when they were a kid and never got rid of it, but they're looked on as having something wrong up here because of their speech. When really, there's nothing wrong up here, but they're looked on that way.
A stutter would be a great example. You have some people who are habitual stutters. I mean, a lot of people get locked up with that from time to time, including me. But there are people, I mean, it is just every other sentence practically. There have been people who have tried to sing, and maybe they can't speak clearly. They stutter when they speak, but when it comes to singing, I mean, it just comes right out, or vice versa. And you do have some things which can be irritating. Mom mentioned the glasses. People can pick up some other habits which are distracting. But one of the things I think the Christians strive for is that you can pick up some good information from about anybody if you're willing to listen. And granted, sometimes there are some things which you would prefer not to have in a speaker or in a teacher. And hopefully people who do that for a living are mindful of those kinds of things and try to, go back and review their information and say, could that have been done in a better way? Or are there some annoying habits? Or people tell them there's something that they're doing and they try to get rid of those things. But you're right. There are some people who really struggle with those kinds of things. And a lot of times what would be a job that they might be able to have is impossible because of that.
Sometimes we listen more to the delivery of the message than what the message is.
Yeah.
We're not paying attention to what the message is as much as we are as how it's being said to us.
And that was what Paul was appreciative of. These people were willing to listen to the gospel. Maybe he performed some signs as well that helped them be convinced that this was information that was truly from God. But if it had been based on the messenger, Paul fully recognized the fact that they might not have listened. And this was really, really commendable. Okay, anybody else? Let's think about Paul's illnesses, at least some of the potential ideas that have been brought forth. At least 14 different possibilities have been suggested as far as what this condition was that might have caused Paul to be rejected by the Galatians people. And a common one would be malaria. When you look at the area where he was, Galatians chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, our text, malaria certainly would fit in. Some people have suggested fever, defective speech, based on what we have over in the Corinthian letter. Some people have even proposed hemorrhoids. So I don't know how you get hemorrhoids connected to what you have here, because, I mean, unless his face is all kind of scrunched up, that just doesn't seem to fit really well. One of the more popular suggestions, though I'm not particularly fond of this, would be poor eyesight. There's some people who think that Paul had poor eyesight because of what we see in verse 15. You have in the next chapter of Galatians, chapter 6 and verse 11, some information about his large handwriting, Well, could you write in a large way? Could you take up a lot of space on the paper, even though you have good eyesight? Is your handwriting necessarily linked to how well you see? No, there's some people who just use up a lot of space on the paper. So I don't know that that proves very much one way or the other. There's some other people who have said that, look, the vision that he had when Christ appeared to him, there was that blinding light, and that messed up his vision. Could that be true?
Yes.
It could be true. But, you know, Ananias, the scales fall from his eyes. So, again, you know, maybe, maybe not. I'm not 100% convinced.
I don't think that would be a possibility, only in that if it was something that Jesus did to him in the moment, when there would be no reason why he wouldn't completely eradicate that from him solely because he did that and he has the power to do that. We see there's times when the apostles couldn't perform a miracle or whatever, and he did it to the fullest of extent. You know, things, I think that almost brings a limitation to his power for him to still have something that bothers him from a miracle that was performed.
There's all those great points. Plus, I think you have to go back, and as you look at Galatians 4, 13 through 15, Paul is indicating whatever he had, the Galatians were able apparently to see it. And for a lot of people, they would have been nauseated by it. Anybody ever see a medical issue which just kind of made you turn your stomach? If you didn't want to vomit, you certainly didn't want to look at it.
Severe burns.
Severe burns would be one. Maybe a person is bleeding. Maybe you have a body which has been opened up because of a wound, and there are some organs which are visible. There are certain things in life which, if you are not accustomed to those kinds of things, people would use the word gross. That makes me sick. I can't stand to look at that. And that's the picture that we're getting here. A lot of people, I think, and some would even go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 7 and say this was Paul's thorn in the flesh. Again, maybe, but the assumption seems to be on the part of many that we're dealing with a chronic issue. That might be true, but it's also possible that this was an acute issue, that this was something that was temporary. There were a lot of problems as far as eye diseases in this particular area. You see that hinted at in the book of Revelation as well. And with some of those eye diseases, you would have pus running out of the eyes. Now, I can't prove this. I do like this as far as being a possibility on the list of suggestions. But if you have somebody who has pus coming out of an eye, and you're there in the assembly, and you're talking to people, and they can actually see this, is that going to be a little off-putting? How long do you want to spend in Bible class with that guy? How long do you want to have your personal Bible study across the table from a fellow who has this oozing from his eye? So this would be an example of something that would be relatively small, but still very, very unattractive. You also, I think, have this possibility. If you go back to Acts chapter 14, verses 19 through 23, you have information about the time where Paul was in this area and he was stoned. If somebody takes some stones to you and pound on you a while with those rocks, how are you going to look?
Damaged.
All right, you're going to look beaten up. I mean, you're going to be bruised. Maybe you're going to be bloodied. And it would be like, let's have a Bible study with somebody, and the teacher's going to be the guy who was just in a fist fight. It's not going to be a very attractive thing, dried blood and some other things. So I'm more inclined to think that this was something that was in the acute category, temporary, perhaps sudden as well, and he just looked like he was really, really rough. Anything that you want to add or ask before we develop this a little bit more with another word? Okay, Paul says, if you go back, and we do have the word temptation in the verses that were read, there is a manuscript variation. Some translations would say my temptation. Some other translations would say your temptation. I'm going to favor the your temptation because of all the things that we've said thus far, that this was a temptation to reject Paul. This ultimately became a test for the Galatians. Were they willing to listen to this guy who had something going on with him that was kind of disgusting, even though he was in that sickly state? Were they willing to overlook that? Were they willing to endure with him? And the answer is yes. One source says that we have here an elliptical sentence, although my disease repelled you, you did not, on my account, refuse to hear my message. And that's really important. Then there's another thing which you can miss this depending on your translation. The ASV does a really good job, though, with verse 13. But ye know that because, notice that word, because I had an infirmity of flesh, I preached the gospel unto you. Isn't that interesting? That implies that had Paul not had this problem, whatever that was, if that hadn't been true for him, then they wouldn't have heard the gospel. Can you extract any lesson from that? It was because I was sick and I looked awful that you heard the truth. And thankfully you obeyed it.
Well, the society that we live in pays an awful lot of attention to the way people look and not the way they speak.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be a preoccupation with this, with our people. If somebody doesn't look quite right, well, we think they must not be right.
Packaging really matters in our society, and we see that at virtually every level. The things that are sold, people will spend a lot of time. Put out a little video not too long ago, came across an article about the Toyota logo on vehicles. It took them 5 years to come up with a Toyota logo. Now, can you imagine that? 5 years for an emblem on a vehicle. That, to me, is absolutely amazing. But people will spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of R&D, research and development, on the right packaging, and religious groups do it as well. Well, Paul tells us that the right packaging, 2 points about that. Number one, it may not be necessary. Humanity says you need the right packaging. But number two, and this is perhaps the most important thing, if you are a person where you require the right packaging to respond in the spiritual realm, what kind of soil might you be? Not the best. God's word has come in a lot of different ways. You know, there would be some people, and I think religion is in a little different category than some of the things people buy. Are there people in third world countries that will pick up a tract which has been blown around for a month? It's on the door. It's on the. It's in the dirt. Been rained on.
Probably.
Wet. You can, just like with sloppy pages, they get dried out and they feel kind of funny. Maybe they're stuck together. There are people who will actually pick up that kind of material and force the pages apart and read through it. Why? It's not the packaging. It's the message. And what do we find in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16? I'm not ashamed of the gospel for what? It, not the packaging, is the power of God unto salvation. So when you think about the packaging, it is one way to sift hearts. We can fall into the trap where we think unless we have the right packaging, it's not going to work. So people go through that sometimes with the church building. There have been people who have thought, unless we have a nice, fancy church building, people are not going to come. Might there be some people who will not come unless it's a nice, fancy building? Yes. But God has once again sifted the hearts.
In trying to sell a product, sometimes they say, I don't have to do anything. The product sells itself. It doesn't matter the packaging that comes in. But also, as far as the because, if you have an infirmity of some way that doesn't preclude you from sharing the gospel, and sometimes some people could get caught up in the woe is me category as opposed to actually doing something productive with their time for good.
Yes, two great points. Let me add one more on there, and then we'll see if there's anything else that comes to mind for someone else. A person can sometimes reason, I'm sick. I'm limited because of this, that, and I'm limited because of age or where I live or who knows what. I don't have certain skills. And because I'm so limited or because I'm so sick, I really can't do much for God. What do you learn from Galatians chapter 4 and verse 13? It might be that sickness, it might be that limitation, which is the very thing that God is able to use. It's really fascinating to me that Paul says, it is because I was in this situation that you heard the gospel. Fascinating.
Yeah. Mission trips for 30 some odd years, every year at least one. And my grandmother always talked about wanting to go with her, but she had had real bad hip and had to have it replaced, and she couldn't hardly get her out. She recognized that she wouldn't be able to be effective in something like that. So instead, she would donate most, if not all, of what would be her contribution to supporting actual preachers who had went through their preaching schools in those countries to help do her part. And I think that's also a good point, is having that, being able to look at yourself and realize your issues and what you have struggled with, and then finding some other opportunity to still further the gospel.
Yeah. when you look at the Galatians, they had the temptation of not listening to Paul. But Paul also could have said, hey, look, I'm sick. I'm not going to do anything. I'm off the hook because I'm ill. God provided another way for him to serve. And there have been a lot of people, as you mentioned with your grandmother, who have said, look, I can't do this, or this is not going to work out very well for me. And rather than use that as an excuse, say, God, then maybe there's another door that can be opened, and there is an alternative, and I certainly want to go through that particular door and choose that path. So it's a great lesson for us, and a lot of people have gone down that path. That it? Mom?
On that verse 13, at the end it says, well, it starts out, you know that because of the physical infirmity, I preached the gospel to you at the first.
Mm-hmm.
What's the significance of that, to you at the first? Does that mean that he first preached at that congregation, or I don't quite understand that.
I think he's calling them back to the first time that we connected. This is how I looked. I looked awful. And you were still willing to hear me. So you get points for that. Good for you. What Paul's saying here about his illness might also be related, perhaps subtly, to the heretics. If you're not feeling well, might you say, all right, I'm not going to go into work, or I need to scale back work for a little bit, or at least some other activities that we might normally do, we're going to have to put those on hold for a little bit? You might do that. People have that experience from time to time. So Paul's illness had cost him some as far as the physical energy that he might have needed to do some other things. He, again, going back to what Mom said a minute ago, he really puts himself out there to these Christians. Had anybody else done that? What about the Judaizers? Had they done that? No. They want to come in after all the work is done and then kind of, take what Paul has done and fleece these people, for the lack of a better word. Well, Paul, as he talks about them, he goes back to that first time and says, you treated me so well, it was like you had received who or what? It was like you had received an angel. How would people receive an angel? Well, they might be scared at first, but I mean, assuming that scare factor wasn't there, how would they receive an angel?
Warm welcome.
I think they would roll out the red carpet. But he doesn't stop there. He says, even an angel or who?
God.
Jesus himself. So they would have shown a lot of excitement. They would have shown a lot of love, a lot of joy for Paul. And then Paul doesn't stop there. He says a little bit more. He says, had it been possible, what would you have done? You would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me had that been possible. Now, that's another reason some people think that Paul had an eye issue. Again, maybe a sight issue. Perhaps. We don't know. But he does use that particular illustration. Now, because of the false teachers, Paul's asking them, hey, what has happened? And we're going to see this especially as we get into verse 16. We had a good relationship. We had a good time. We've been brethren. You were very kind to me. You appreciated the message that I gave, even though things were not going that well for me. One other quick point, you may have a word which is blessedness or something similar. Gratulation is the word that's used in the ASV in verse 15. King James uses the word blessedness. That word is very similar. You have the adjective form of the term used in Matthew chapter 5, verses 8 through 11, where Jesus gave the Beatitudes. He said, blessed are thee, blessed are thee, blessed are thee. Same basic word that you have here. So the Galatians, they had been blessed by meeting Paul, even though he apparently didn't look too attractive when he was there, and they were also blessed by being delivered from the idolatry associated with the Gentiles. Again, final thought that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Galatians 4:16. Adam, back to you.
With the eye thing, I always kind of took it as it's more of like a figure of speech, how we would say, talking about someone to someone else, going, this person is such a generous person, they give their shirt off their back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I always looked at that. You would look out your eyes and give
them
to me. Because in that world, I mean, you couldn't really do a whole lot if you couldn't see.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the case anyways, but it more so back then.
Yeah, and that's a good Midwest expression, maybe used in some other parts of the country as well, as far as giving the shirt off your back. That's exactly what he's describing. You rolled out the red carpet, you were kind to me, you did everything you possibly could, and you didn't turn me away because of how I looked. So the Galatians, at least initially, had been so kind to him. But then, as we get to verse 16, it's like he's been slapped in the face. It's just like there's this huge seesaw effect. Anything else before we pick up with 16? All right, let's look at that now. He says, so then, am I become your enemy by telling you the truth? Wow, what a drastic change. When you tell the truth, can you lose some friends? Can you make some enemies?
Hurt some feelings.
Yes, and yes, and you certainly can hurt some feelings. Paul was wondering why these people who had formerly showed him so much love, I mean, they treated him like an angel, they treated him like Jesus himself, now they're counting him what as an enemy. Now, one of the interesting points here is that when he talks about being treated as an enemy, or seen as an enemy, he uses the perfect tense. So that would suggest that there was a time in the past, again because of the false teachers, that the Galatians had changed their view about Paul, and this enemy, which word which is translated enemy, this just, well, let's back up. When you hear the word enemy, what comes to mind? I'll ask the question before I give you the answer.
Hard feelings.
Okay, hard feelings. How else would you define an enemy?
The opponent of war.
All right, you have someone who qualifies as an opponent. Anything else?
Damaged property.
Okay, an enemy could damage something that you have.
Somebody that's diametrically opposed to
yeah.
what you think.
So when we think about an enemy, we sort of have a scale, don't we? If a child has an enemy at school, they're not expecting that their life is going to be taken. But that enemy just says some bad things or posts some things on social media about them. But on the other end of the stick, if you have truly an enemy, what happens if you're in a war zone? What does enemy mean then?
Yeah.
They're not just saying bad things about you. They want to kill you. They want to blow you up. They want to shoot you. They want to stab you. They want to take your life. Well, the word which is translated enemy, and we're going to see this word when we get over to the works of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5, has the idea of an enemy combatant. This has the idea of an enemy in battle. This is warfare kind of enemy. So this is not just the person is unhappy with me and says some bad things about me, but this is enemy to the 10th degree, the nth degree. It's the person who is ferociously opposed to you. And that's the word that Paul uses. So he asks the question, so then, perfect tense, have I become your enemy? Am I now the guy that, not literally that they wanted to kill him, but am I the one that you are so opposed to that you actually hate me? Well, he had really stirred things up with the false teachers and the idea that it was wrong to go back to Judaism. The Bible has a lot of passages which talk about people not wanting to hear the truth, and here is one of them. One source said, I'll give you a couple of quotes here, many today don't want the preacher to tell the truth from the pulpit. They would rather he would say something complimentary that would smooth feathers and make them feel good. We all like to have our backs rubbed, and there are a lot of back-rubbing preachers from the contemporary world right now rather than people who declare the truth. Another source said, it is utterly amazing that so many react in such a violent way to the preaching of the truth. Were such reaction confined to an unbelieving world, it might not surprise us so much. But fellow Christians oftentimes become angry when we attempt to address their sin and error and call them to repentance. Telling the truth gets people into a lot of trouble. It's gotten some preachers into trouble. It's gotten parents into trouble. Gotten sometimes kids into trouble. And when you start looking at Bible characters, you do have some people, some illustrations of just how problematic telling the truth can be as far as consequences. You think about John the Baptist. He talks to Herod, lets Herod know that he's involved in a relationship which is adulterous, and it is incestuous. And what happens to John the Baptist? It's off with the head. He's beheaded. You have, for example, some other people, Stephen, over there in Acts chapter 7. He loses his life because he tells the truth. Truth can be inconvenient. It can be difficult to hear. And yet, when it is told in a loving way, and that's what the Bible teaches, it needs to be heard and obeyed. When you look at telling the truth, that particular word, it's expressed with the present tense. It means to deal faithfully or truly with anyone, and you find the same word and the same idea over in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 15. When you look at that word, which is translated enemy, though, it, of course, brings several other ideas into focus. It describes a lack of love, probably no interest in truth, and a great deal of hate. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down to verses 17 and 18? Okay. He says, they, and this would be a reference back to the heretics, the Judaizers, the false teachers. He said, they zealously seek you in no good way. Nay, they desire to shut you out, that ye may seek them. But it is good to be zealously sought in a good matter at all times, and not only when I am present with you. Now, Paul wanted the best for these Christians. He also knew that the Judaizers wanted to exert control over these Christians, and he describes that with what key word? He said, they seek you how? They seek you
zealously.
Well, when you hear the word zeal, what comes to mind? If somebody says we're doing this with zeal, or we need more zeal in the group, what are they saying? We need more
energy.
We need more passion. We need more dedication. We need people who are going to put forth or exert greater effort. And that's what Paul is talking about. The original text actually has the idea of courting. When we hear, maybe it's not a word that we use too often anymore. Amish probably use it more than we do. But when somebody is courting, a guy is courting a girl, what does that mean? What are we trying to convey?
Showing interest.
All right, that would be part of it. Anything else?
Favoritism.
Think he's going to show up once a year to court his girl?
No.
How's it going to show up? What's he going to do?
Every Saturday night.
All right, at least once a week. And in today's world, probably at least a few texts, multiple times a day. So you have this idea as far as the false teachers. They were courting the Galatians. We've talked before about how some of that might have been done, that they were going back and telling the Galatians, look, there's special feast days, and you can get closer to God with this special act of circumcision, and, keeping, the Sabbath day, all those kinds of things. So you have here really an evil zeal, or at least it is a zeal without knowledge. One source described it this way: they want to put your scalp on their belt and be able to say, we were over at Galatia and we had so many converts. Well, that's not quite how it would have been, but that would have been probably how they would have seen it. The contrast that we have between Paul and the apostates could not be clearer. He's the guy who's telling them the truth. He's the guy who wants to be their friend versus their enemy. But you have these Judaizers, they're telling outright lies. Paul's trying to glorify Christ. These Judaizers are trying to glorify themselves. And Proverbs 27 and verse 6 talks about the deceitfulness of kisses from the enemy. And that's really what you have with these guys. Paul said the Galatians were, as far as their interaction with the false teachers, they were being shut out. That's what the false teachers wanted to do. What do you think that means? Being shut out from what?
Fellowship.
All right. Fellowship with who? Paul. Anything else? Well, I would say shut out from the gospel. They're trying to get them back into the system of Judaism. It looks like the false teachers wanted to be the sole spiritual leaders for the Galatians, again, to kind of come into the work that Paul had done and then begin cleaning up, mopping up. When you start looking at cultists, they do the same kind of thing. They don't really love people. They use their followers to take as much as they can get from them. And you have it. Something similar here with denominational preachers. It doesn't happen with every religious group, but you do have some groups who have told people, don't study the Bible, just listen to us. And you, I think, can find a similar thing with these apostates. Paul said it's good to be zealous. That's what you have in verse 18. He wanted these Christians to be active. He wanted these Christians to be doing things. He said that he wanted them to do good at all times, regardless if he was present or not. Anything that you want to add or ask? That brings us down to verse 19. Tim?